Welcome back, everyone. This is Sam.
And this is Corrine, and we are two OncDocs. This week's episode, we're going to focus on a recap of some of the important data that was just discussed at ASCO GU in San Francisco at the end of February. And we're going to go over some of the data in prostate, RCC, bladder, and I will also cover briefly one testicular cancer abstract.
Perfect. Thanks, Corrine. So like I say, I'm going to get out of your way. But to start us off, let's go with prostate. Tell us about the PEACE-3 trial.
Absolutely. So PEACE-3, which was initially presented at ESMO in 2024, is a phase 3 trial looking at radium-223 and enzalutamide versus enzalutamide alone in patients with metastatic castrate-resistant prostate cancer and primarily bone-only mets. And so the final results were presented with a PFS and an OS benefit. The OS difference was 32.6 versus 38.1 months. But one of the caveats is that only about 2-3% of patients had received prior abiraterone and about 30% had received prior docetaxel. The side effects were similar. We see fatigue, hypertension, cytopenia, fractures, but we did see 3 hematologic malignancies in the combo arm. So there was an AML, MDS, CML. So it will be important to see long-term the rate of these complications. And a reminder for fellows that bone-protecting agents are mandatory for patients receiving a radium-223, whether it's bisphosphonates or denosumab. But, you know, I think it's not reflective of current standards of care, but in the discussion at ASCO GU, you know, we do know that about 20% of patients that switch from Abi to Enza could have a response. And there's some also rationale for the synergy here.
Absolutely. And again, fellows, listeners out there, before you start your bisphosphonates or denosumab, you need to get that dental clearance and think about calcium, vitamin D as well for good bone health. And so next, let's talk about the BRCA trial, which I think is for BRCA1, 2, or maybe ATM mutated prostate.
Yes, you got it. So in metastatic castrate-resistant cancer as well, these were patients with BRCA1 or 2 or ATM alterations that got abiraterone and prednisone with olaparib either in combination or sequentially. And the results showed that there was a longer PFS with both agents together versus either agent alone and sequentially. Some of the caveats is that it was a small trial, crossover was not mandated. And again, we do need long-term data on MDS AML for our PARP inhibitors. And there is a future trial, which is called the TALENT trial, which is going to look at PARP inhibitors in those that did receive prior abiraterone. So that's our current standard of care in MCSPC. And they will be randomized to ADT with talazoparib with enzalutamide versus ADT talazoparib to answer the question of, in the current paradigm of ARPI upfront, does rechallenging with the ARPI with the PARP inhibitor make sense?
I like this. I like how you guys always add an extra question to your next trial. And you guys think through it so thoughtfully in GU. And so finally, our last prostate trial. Tell us about Poseidon.
So Poseidon was a meta-analysis of individual patient data from 6 phase 3 randomized trials, which examined whether patients with prostate cancer benefit from the addition of hormone therapy to post-operative radiotherapy after radical prostatectomy. And the addition of ADT did not improve survival in the overall patient population, but there was an improvement in OS for those with a PSA over 0.5 at the time of radiation therapy. So these results showed that there's no added benefit of prolonged hormone therapy, so 24 months or 2 years, and suggest that short-term therapy, so 4 to 6 months of ADT, is adequate for most men in this clinical setting.
Terrific. Less sometimes could be more, right? And then on to bladder. Talk to us about KEYNOTE B15.
Yes. So KEYNOTE B15, neoadjuvant EV pembro and muscle invasive bladder cancer who are cisplatin eligible. This is potentially the most practice-changing data to come out of ASCO GU. And so here patients got 4 cycles of EV pembro, then cystectomy, and then 13 cycles of pembro and 5 cycles of adjuvant EV. One of the questions was how many patients in the control arm got immunotherapy, because we've had adjuvant nivolumab approved in this setting for a few years. And so the trial did allow, as of February 2023, for patients could receive adjuvant immunotherapy, but we don't know how many patients did. And then also most recently, Niagara, you know, GemCis, Durva, and the perioperative setting has been our standard of care. So, you know, this is comparing primarily to just chemo, so GemCis, and then potentially nothing in the adjuvant setting. It did meet its EFS with a hazard ratio of 0.53, OS hazard ratio of 0.65. PATH CR difference was 55.8% versus 32.5%. About a quarter of patients stopped the neoadjuvant EV Pembro due to a side effect, and about 28% stopped the adjuvant EV Pembro due to a side effect. So about half of patients completed the full course. The side effects, you know, the ones to remember, especially, you know, for our fellows, for practicing clinicians, remember the skin toxicity, about two-thirds of patients, neuropathy, about a third of patients, almost a quarter had ocular toxicity. And there still is a concern of overtreatment for some that complete the entire adjuvant portion and then undertreatment for those that don't respond. But overall, you know, this is incredibly exciting that we have new agents, you know, beyond platinum chemotherapy in this setting. We know that this was FDA approved in November for cisplatin ineligible. And so will this soon become FDA approved for cis eligible?
EV Pembro continues to make waves for you guys. And I love that bladder continues to have a moment. It is long overdue, right? And so talk to us about HER2 agents and for metastatic bladder cancer. What did you guys discuss at GU ASCO?
So we heard about a phase two trial, which is called RC48G001, which looked at disitamab vedotin, which is a HER2 antibody drug conjugate in HER2 expressing previously treated metastatic urothelial carcinoma. So we know that we can see up to 50 to 80% HER2 expression in metastatic bladder cancer. And we know that T-DXd is approved in the second line setting for those with IHC 3+. But this trial here actually included HER2 low as well. So there was a cohort A, which was HER2 of 3+ or 2+ with positive FISH, and then a cohort B that had the HER2 low. So 2+ with a negative FISH or 1+. And you remember HER2 low sort of made waves in breast cancer a couple years ago. And so there were 151 patients in this phase two trial. And then the overall response rate was 62% with over 16% CR regardless of the cohort. This was a post-platinum treated population, so not post-EV Pembro. A small number of patients got subsequent EV, similar to the T-DXd trial for which we have that approval. So it still begs the question of how is this relevant post-EV Pembro? Can we extrapolate? There is a phase three trial looking at DV, this antibody drug conjugate with Pembro in the frontline setting. But unfortunately, the control arm is chemo maintenance IO. So it won't truly still answer the question of how this fits in, but we will probably just have to extrapolate clinically.
Definitely. And HER2, you don't need that much, apparently. So everything was HER2 3+, and now it's HER2 low. So I love that we continue to have more targets as we progress through oncology treatments. And so moving ways from bladder to RCC, tell us what was exciting in the world of RCC at ASCO.
Yes. So there were two exciting trials looking at belzutifan, our HIF-2 alpha inhibitor. And so LITESPARK-011 looked in metastatic renal cell carcinoma. This is clear cell. Patients that received belzutifan or HIF-2 alpha inhibitor and lenvatinib or TKI in the second line or beyond setting after immunotherapy. A reminder for fellows that usually after frontline immunotherapy, we can do single agent TKI or post IO anti-TKI, belzutifan is approved. But in this cohort, about 55% had prior TKI. So assumably the others just received maybe ipi nevo in the frontline setting. And the PFS for lenvatinib with belzutifan was 14.8 months versus 10.7 months for cabozantinib. It also had a significant overall response rate, and the OS is immature at this point. About 20 patients had a CR. And as far as toxicity, we saw about 15% hypoxia, about two-thirds had to dose reduce their TKI, and about a third had to dose reduce their belzutifan. And then the other exciting trial with belzutifan was LITESPARK-022. And so here now we're moving back up into the localized setting for resected RCC, clear cell as well. And patients received either adjuvant pembrolizumab or belzutifan with pembrolizumab. And so we know that adjuvant Pembro has been approved for a few years. Highly testable questions to know the criteria for adjuvant Pembro for resected RCC. And so this is sort of adding, you know, treatment and potential disease-free survival. So it did meet its disease-free survival. The median was not reached, but a hazard ratio of 0.72 to add belzutifan to the year of pembrolizumab. The OS is immature. We know that with belzutifan, we can also see anemia. So about 12% of patients required either red blood transfusions, or erythropoietin stimulating agents. And so there still is a concern on how to tease out those that we might be overtreating, some that we were overtreating before with just pembro, but now with belzutifan. But it's exciting overall that we're seeing continued disease-free survival benefit.
Absolutely. And then last, you promised me something about germ cell tumors. You know, I work at IU. Can't skip testicular. So tell us what happened there.
Yes. So a shout out to your colleague, Dr. Jennifer King, on her phase 2 trial investigating cabozantinib 60 milligrams in relapse refractory germ cell tumors. There were 44 patients, 2 females. 44% had poor risk at diagnosis, and the median prior number of chemo regimens was 4 regimens, including 2/3 with prior stem cell transplant. The clinical benefit of cabozantinib was 43.2%, and 38.6% had stable disease for over 3 months. And so it's exciting. This is the first non-chemo agent that has some meaningful activity in this setting. We do see, of course, with cabo diarrhea, LFT elevations, but you know, we're continuing to try to figure out how to improve for the patients that, although there's a high cure rate, for those that don't get cured, how can we do better?
Yeah. And I mean, a breakthrough, first non-chemo. I mean, that's awesome for these patients who are chemo veterans beyond belief, to give them something that has different toxicities, but maybe a little gentler toxicity. Other things, I know you mentioned the diarrhea, the LFTs. Think about hand-foot syndrome and also blood pressure. And so thank you, Corinne. Thanks for covering GU ASCO for us again in 2026. I'm looking forward to ASCO this year, just a few months away. And so we'll be on the lookout for some exciting things in all oncology. And as always, thank you guys so much for listening. Good luck with studying for your boards this year. I know ITEs have just come by, and ASH ITE is this week. Please feel free to reach out to us with corrections or comments on our Instagram or our Twitter to OncDocs.